I got laid off. I got fired.
But here's the thing. I was a binge guy.
I remember seeing her at the local titty bar.
I feel dirty right now just telling it into a microphone.
We're broken around here.
Working man, it sucks.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Working Class Holes podcast. I'm your host, Ed McGowan, here in a break room with my co-host. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Eddie?
Josh Ricardo.
I am very excited for a lot of reasons today. First of all, our guest is a really funny comedian. He's been on Fallon. He's done a ton of stuff. Also, he's the first guest we've ever had that we were up for the same role in a TV show, and he got it.
Whoa.
And I cannot wait to talk to him about this. Without any further ado, Matthew Broussard. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hello, right. Rejected comic number two, I'm supposing, based on that.
No, actually, all right. We'll start this way for today.
Okay.
It was a role on Marvel's Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
And I loved the show.
Yeah, me too.
Great show. And I got in there, and they called me back for that role 3 times.
Whoa.
And they were like, it's between you and one other person.
Wow.
And I didn't know, they don't tell you who it is, obviously. But what I loved about the role is that they actually break a bit down in it that I thought was really fun, because it's like a real
good dialogue.
Right?
It's really good dialogue.
It was like, I don't remember the exact words, but it was basically like, you know. I know you do. I blocked it out. I had to do it
lines.
So many times.
I knew his lines. I knew my lines.
Yeah. It was just like a wonderful, I'll let you do it, but it was just like a wonderful way of constructing bits. And it took place in my favorite part of the show that was so accurate to stand up for me. It was like the stand up diner.
Yeah.
You know? So go ahead. Do the line.
It was a joke worked. Cameras swinging around the diner, pulling past two comics eating together as it makes its way towards Midge. But it just catches 5 lines of dialogue with me, comedian number two, I think, and then the comedian number one of joke works great in Boston, Philly. I get to Denver, nothing.
Yeah.
And the guy says, it's a regional joke. My sandwich joke, I have a different sandwich for every city. I say, which sandwich is funniest? He goes, hoagie. I go, hoagie is a funny sandwich.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's such an accurate. I think, I'm guessing Noah Gardenschwartz had some,
yeah.
Noah was a writer for that show and adds a lot of authenticity to the stand-up and the talk about stand-up. And like, I read that and I was like, I bet Noah had some part.
It was the
that.
Most accurate. Because
so cool.
I read
so
for
that's great.
And the smugness of it,
oh,
hoagie.
It's great. It's great.
Just so proud.
So great.
I love it.
The sound in your mouth.
Yeah. Hoagie.
He's like, I got a different hoagie. I got a different sandwich for every city.
Because it's true.
Gyro.
Because I do the road so much. I mean, the clubs here, like, sporadically I'll work, but the road is where I do all my work. And it is true, I don't change anything on the road that much, but you know the gigs we play. It's like you're in the middle of a red country, but like you really are in deep with people that are not the demographic of, say, the Comedy Cellar. And you're like, that is true. Sometimes you have to change something demographically.
Grocery stores. I have to change. I have a grocery store joke. I have to change it. I love saying Dwayne Reed, but I can't outside of New York.
Right. Yeah.
I say 7-Eleven here when I'm down in Philly. I say Wawa. I'm going to Boston this week, and I'm going to say Dunkin'.
Wawa's a funny store.
Yeah.
Wawa's great.
But see, it's like Wawa, the syllables.
You start to lose it, though.
Oh, if you're in Texas, you can do Bucky's.
Bucky's. See, Bucky's is fun. That's a great syllable.
Just that. People get it. Will cheer just for hearing Bucky's.
Oh, yeah.
I know that.
Yeah. I once saved a set by just saying who likes Wawa and who likes... what's the other fucking competition? It's Wawa and there's one other.
Oh, Sheetz is like...
Sheetz yeah.
is like the
I was in a Sheetz area, and I was... It was like the first 5 minutes, they were super tight, and I... somehow pulled that out, and like the whole sec I coasted.
I was in a Sheetz late night, and I'm just like trying to get dinner in a Sheetz.
Yeah,
and I go, and a guy goes, yeah, they make sandwiches back there. I go, like a Wawa? And he looked at me like we had this stare down for a moment. He goes, you know where you are, right?
All right, let's start for real now.
Okay,
Matthew, what is your craziest or worst day job while pursuing your craft?
Not craziest, but worst. I was a financial analyst, and that was
yeah, really
the toughest
tracks
job
for you.
I had.
And I hate saying that, but you look like a guy
but
that knows about finance.
Wasn't what you think it was. That sounds so fancy. It was a 9 to 5, and I mean really loose on the 9 and really loose on the 5. It was a 9:45 to 4:45 if no one was around to check.
Oh, especially finance. Yeah, you could figure it out.
2-person company. I was the third employee. It was the main guy, and all of this is not true, by the way. This is all made up. I'm changing all the details because I can't tell the truth, but I'm going to say it was a main woman and a male secretary. Whoa. My boss.
I've been a male secretary.
Yeah. So, and I came in as an analyst, but so kind of in between, and I was more just a spreadsheet jockey and made enough money, like a teacher salary, more or less.
Yeah.
And it was, I started comedy like probably a month after I started that job, and like, I no skin in the game, no heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just, yeah, once you found comedy.
Yeah, it was just, what's the minimum I can do?
Yeah.
Not trying to get ahead.
Get to the next spot. To,
like, get certified as an analyst, take all these tests. Like, you know,
but you're good in math, though, correct?
I like math.
Because finance wasn't math. Your tweets, it wasn't math. Huh?
It wasn't math. Boy,
well, it's a lot of Excel spreadsheet, because I work around in finance. I know about that kind of job. It's so much Excel. It's exactly what he was saying. They don't ask you to really do any creative abilities with numbers.
Like,
it's
you don't use like, any kind of calculus or anything like that.
No,
like,
God,
you
no.
You like post some kind of. You have like a very.
I learned more math than I would have ever needed. It's like so indulgent how much math I learned. I would be so. People talk, ugh, calculus. When will I use this? I'm like, if you're lucky. You know how hard you have to fight to have a job where you use calculus?
Yeah.
You would be so blessed.
Yes.
Yeah. What a dream to get to use fun math.
You probably make a million minimum if you use calculus in your job.
Or very little and you're working in academia. Oh. Either making $20,000 or a million.
You're
an educator, maybe.
My brother builds engine casings for government and for private, all this stuff, all these plants. And he's like, I don't use calculus. I barely know calculus. Just a ton of trigonometry. I'm like, so you're using 10th grade math?
He was
like, yes.
That's crazy that we spent so much time teaching kids math when they should have been teaching them how to balance a checkbook.
I still think it's great to learn math. I think an abundance of math is great because it increases your just ability to understand
things. Well, I like that it never changes. It's, the answer is the answer.
Yes, yes. I did use VLOOKUP. I remember using VLOOKUP on Excel.
What is that?
So you can, if you have just a big array of things, if you have a stock, like a stock, this account and then this number next to it, and just a big long list, it basically says every time you see this, add those up. And create a table based on how many times you see this. So it's a great thing for, and it felt truly satisfying. Like, look at me using my degree, using this very standard, non-exotic Excel thing. And then, I mean, just the nature of the job was so, people can be averse to technology sometimes.
What a life handsome men leave, Eddie, because this guy uses a little bit of math, makes some good money. You're over there scraping plates in the back of a Philly Chinese restaurant. How the other half lives, huh, Ed?
Hey,
that's his worst job. Is like, I hated the fact that I had to be sitting here.
I know trigonometry too.
Okay. Here's the thing. I know trigonometry.
Yeah, you're an engineer.
Trigonometry. I'm still working in dishwasher as a dishwasher.
You're an engineer?
I went to engineering school for 4 years.
Nice. What kind of engineering?
Electrical.
Nice, the best
then
one.
He found his true love.
And then I failed
crack out. Crack cocaine.
I failed
That's
out.
A hard degree.
It's very hard.
You like it's like the most math of all of them.
It's all, that's where I really got lost is all the like the quantum and the imaginary numbers, all the differential equation stuff, all that.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah, differential was so fucking hard. Plus I was doing like a lot of LSD at the time. Like I was just I was not
didn't help.
There
yeah,
for
a couple of. Yeah. A couple of hiccups in the old career.
Yeah, yeah. I remember sitting there in the final, like, I need to get an A+ on this to stay in school after 8 semesters. And I was like, yeah, I'm going home. This is done.
For an SAT, I really needed it to try to get a scholarship for football. And I held in a deuce. The whole thing, and it really affected my score.
Really?
Like, it was all on the line, but I had such a fear of using a public restroom.
Oh.
I don't have that anymore because of travel now. I'll shit in a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, right.
But during that time, as like an 17-year-old, I was like, all right, I'm just
going
to hold it.
Huh. That affects
and it's like a 4.5-hour test.
It's long.
Well, it's very distracting. To have to take a shit.
Oh, yeah, are you kidding me? It's
having
the worst.
A pee is great, though. Sometimes if you hold in a pee, you're so much more productive.
More focus?
Yeah.
More focused.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to,
it's weird.
When I played sports, if I had to take a piss, like I was playing hockey, I would have great shifts. Like it wouldn't, I don't know if I would make it to the third period, but like that first two periods were great.
Yeah, you're killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not with the deuce on deck.
Can't
tell.
Very distracting.
Deuce on deck.
So how'd you get the job with the two other people? How'd
Swimming.
You get this job?
Met a guy at the JCC.
Oh,
you swim as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, were you a college athlete as well?
No.
Just swim at like high school and
club team in college, or specifically master's team in college. I started at the end of high school. I really loved it, but I wasn't good enough to go to college to do it. So I started swimming with the master's team and the club team. Trained wherever I could in college. Just wanted to do it. Didn't care about competing. Just really liked it.
You feel the same way about stand up?
Yes.
So you love stand up the same way?
Yes. Similar.
See, that's interesting.
So those are two things I love.
I
was a runner as a kid, but
Okay. So I love talking to people that had another love or first love before they discovered stand up. and understanding, like, okay, is that, did that love transfer over in the same way? Because stand up's so, because I love sports for the meritocracy that's attached to it. It's like, yeah, you're not, most of the time, 99% of the time, you're going to play if you're good. Mm-hmm. They don't want to lose, so they want you to play. So I always found that kind of conflicting for the love I had for it. You never found that at all with, like, the competition levels being skewed in entertainment? Like, it's not really based on...
Stand-up feels the most meritocratic of any of the entertainments I can think about. Compared to singing, to music, acting.
Yes.
That was the thing I loved about comedy, because I was in a less competitive scene, was there was just a night where I realized, what if I treated this like swimming? Swimming, I'm just trying to be in the pool as much as I can and do the work. It doesn't matter what you do day in, day out.
That's true love. Yeah.
Just put in the reps, put in the time, and you will see the results. Mm-hmm. And ultimately with swimming, I stopped seeing the results because I was training hard and not smart and really plateaued to a place where I should have been much faster.
Yeah.
And I was very frustrated with that. And I didn't start out very talented. And then when I started comedy, I noticed that I had a little bit of something from the start.
Yeah.
Not like killing right out of the gate, but I was like, I have a little something. There's just something that seems to be...
There's some built-in aptitude here, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I seem to be doing much better than other people who started, though I'm still abysmal next to a real, you know,
sure,
pro. And I was like, what if I applied... What if I actually tried hard at something I'm good at versus I wasted... 8 years on something I'm bad at.
That I just loved. Right, yeah.
Right, imagine if I actually honed an inherent skill.
That's pretty insightful. Where did you start?
Houston.
Okay.
But despite its size, it was at that point really not a competitive place for comedy.
Yeah.
There was one D room, like cruise ship comics, no credits, $1,000 for the headliner, no feature. They're just guest spots. And I loved that room because they put me up a bunch because no one else was coming to hang out. I was just the one guy who was there every weekend.
That's great.
And then the other room was the Houston Improv, which seats 460. Which means it was a black room.
Yep.
The only people who could fill that room were Bruce and Earthquake and Cheryl Underwood and Gary Owens. That was it. So I would come there for like the weekdays, but I was not often a fit for the headliners.
Sure.
And those are my two rooms.
That was the, because I started in San Diego where La Jolla Comedy Store was my home club, but it was yet to boom like it is now. I mean, San Diego now is like 17 rooms you can get up in. But
so many.
When I started there, it was probably 3 total. And only one real club. But there was one club that was an all black club, but that was like the only place that would put you up if, you know, but you had to be able to handle an all black room. And it was very much BET era. They try to copy Comic View. They put a table up on the stage. They had people sitting up there that were not like attractive. Like, you know, like Comic View would have like attractive black people up there. It would be like people heckling you. Like one guy got shit thrown at him. One guy got stabbed in the parking lot. Like, it was not a fun.
Oh, damn.
But learning how to perform there was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of, you know, I talk about it in my act. I'm Hawaiian Sicilian, so everyone's brown but me. So I wasn't necessarily off marker with being around a room of black people. It was fucking warfare. I mean, did you get
Why
up?
Why did he stab a guy?
So
I like to think it was like a really good comedy note.
Well,
it was just like, gotta be more present up there.
The comic was talking to the guy's girl. Yeah, too many syllables.
Four words.
Terrible setup, bad punch. That would be legit. I'd be for that. He's just stabbing people who are lazy, where hacks get stabbed. It was called Mr. O's, where the hacks get stabbed. And the guy came back after he was stabbed. He came back. That's how hard it was to get mic time. The guy came back after the stab wound healed. That's how hard it was to get, because the Comedy Store back in the day would not, if you were like a urban comedian, the bookers there at the time were not trying to put you up. It just wasn't going to happen. I'm not saying they were racist, but it wasn't. It's La Jolla. So it's just like any demographical situation. There were, so that was the
separate but equal. You heard it here,
separate,
folks.
But equal.
I love it.
And I was like the only white guy performing at the place. So it was like I was living the reverse life of all my counterparts on that show. They were like, hey, how can we play the Comedy Store? I'm like, I don't know. They're not putting me up. You're the only ones putting me up.
Yeah.
So, but did you do that room in Houston ever, like when it was packed?
No, maybe like once or twice, but never really. The other room I did was really blue collar, which was great for me to like perform to that kind of crowd, given my background's not that. And I kind of built my act for them. And then when I spent the summer in Austin before I moved to California. And boy, does that blue collar comedy not translate to the kids at the comic book shop, the cafes, you know, to the alt shows.
I mean, they're
so
more like
having both those, you know, the sides of it.
Alt was pretty huge then too, right? I'm
very
assuming
big.
I'm just trying to do the math in my 2013? Head.
2013?
Yeah, like Dimitri Martin was massive.
Hannibal, Mulaney, Kinane, everyone was doing Kinane at that point. Yeah,
but I feel like Alt just took over now and is just mainstream stand-up.
Well, then now the blowback to that was, I mean, I have lots of thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, please.
The saw, I call it the beta crew, where comedy got like really soft and sweet.
Yes,
you saw the Chicago crew of Mulaney, Pete Holmes, Kinane, Kumail. That whole crew was so popular among comedians, and then now mainstream popular. And I would say the reversal was now for people who are just starting watching comedy, they've never seen the bro-y machismo of people mm-hmm. like Schultz and Gillis.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the, oh, what about yeah. this, not this like, you know, pretentious artsy soft boy shit. What yep. about this kind of real dude? And I think it just waffles back and forth over yeah. like 5 to 10 year kind yeah. of intervals.
That's that a really, sense. That's a really accurate yep. trail. I mean, I think honestly, the part about stand-up that I loved, and we talk about it on the show all the time, is just kind of the harshness. Because if you come from a harsh background, mm-hmm. that's why it kind of attracted a lot of people that do right. come from like not great backgrounds. I mean, obviously that's not your situation, but the harshness does come from a certain place where I used to go, oh, I really love like how ruthless that is, because it's able to also be funny. But yeah, it's hard to find that mix. I think you're right. Every 5 or 10 years, it comes back to play. Yeah.
I remember when I discovered those, like the, you know, Mulaney and stuff, I was like, look at me, another like non-confrontational, like soy boy, you know, raised, coddled. Like I found it very relatable, and I was like, oh, this kind of makes comedy feel more accessible to me.
Yes.
You don't have to be. I thought you had to be Jim Norton. I thought you had to be like a piece of shit. Uh-huh. Who, I don't want to eat salads. I'm a piece uh-huh. of shit. I have no impulse control.
That's interesting.
It's attracted a whole wave of comedians mm-hmm. into stand-up that Ugh. Normally wouldn't be.
Ugh. And now I've now I've seen this whole wave over the last 10 years of like now that's the norm, and they're pretending like what I'm doing now is so normal for comedy, and people pretending like it's somehow I grew up in a cul-de-sac. I'm not a comic. I'm like, we all grew up in cul-de-sacs yeah. now. Yeah. Look at Don't Tell. All of us yeah. had good education.
We weeded the other guys.
College. There's nothing interesting about this. This is not subversive in the slightest. It's so boring.
We weeded the interesting
losers
out. I am
so disgusted to be part of this wave.
Out.
Now I just want dirtbags. I want Tim McLaughlin. I can watch Tim McLaughlin all day.
I'm a big fan of Tim right now.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so refreshing. Yeah, yeah. I have a gambling problem.
That's amazing.
I cheat on my taxes. He's great. I love broken. You're right. Broken people are so fun.
They're so nice to have around until you have like money laying around and they have to steal it.
So many people now being a financial analyst, that's not that interesting of a background. Like having come from that. And then I had other jobs, but that one was the worst just because it was such a small company that my whole self-esteem was just my boss's mood that day.
Right.
And my boss's mood that day was just the stock market that day.
Yeah.
Or how one of his clients had
nothing
treated
to do
him
with
that
you.
Day.
Nothing to do with your work.
Uh-huh. And I was bad, but like I was trying to, you know, that kind of being in a bad relationship, you're like, am I making mistakes? Am I facing this attack because I'm making these mistakes? Or is it just how they feel?
Yeah.
And that kind of that
it's crazy
dissonance,
when
not knowing if it's
like
you
that?
Or them.
Yeah.
And you take on their personality, mm-hmm. like you just want to please. Mm-hmm. You kind of got that like young like.
Well, I've always been in, you know, because I've always had to work in offices. I'm not a manual labor guy. All my family manual labor. I knew I couldn't do it, so I did offices. Plus, the schedule for me works out with stand up. I could 9 to 5. I could kill it 9 to 5. Take one power nap and be able to do shows. And I was like, all right, if I can make money this way, not have to sleep on a couch, I'll do it. But I'm always in subservient roles. I mean, for a long time until recently. But it's like you go in and you. Are like for me as a male secretary or some like admin contractor guy just trying to make money to pay his rent, mm-hmm. you are treated like shit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you're right. You are basing everything you're doing off of the happiness level of your superiors.
Totally.
And they don't, especially people who are like middle management. Like it sounds like you have like a boss who was rich. I have like
He's
middle,
very successful,
yeah, like middle management people making not that much more than me, just coming in their pants every time they get to tell me what to do. Like just the love, the power, mm-hmm. just drunk off this little power they have.
Or monitor syndrome.
And I fall underneath them. So that has been the worst. It's any job where it's like. Dude, you make $5 more than me. Like, why are you kicking me around? Like, you're Gordon Gekko.
Have you ever been in a position now where you have power over someone and you felt yourself getting, like,
just
high
in,
off that?
Just in bed. No, no, actually, I really enjoy, like, in my, like, professional life, even stand-up is one thing when you're on stage, but I do enjoy, like, the under-the-radar scenario of being in an office. So I'm not, even if someone's, I think because I've been always the report in person, when I have employees, I'm like a pretty effective, assertive, but at the same time, not really like drunk off of telling this fucker, you better put the pencils this way. Like I never.
You can't be too nice. That's the thing. If like you dream about being so nice, but then you're like, you got to lay it down a little bit. You got to beat up someone.
Have like assistant editors I deal with sometimes where I'm like, dude, I'm showing you this so that you can do my job. Mm-hmm. Like in 5 years, you can be doing this. So let me just show you this, and like I'm gonna be curt a little bit, but like I'm looking out for you, and I'll look out for you.
That's our upbringing, right? As like middle, like lower middle
like
class.
I want to bring you up.
I'm a union. I'm raised by union guys.
But if you fuck me.
It's like I'm gonna be loyal to the craft, but if you fuck me, yeah, there's
if
so
you
many.
Fuck me because, like, if you fuck me just an honest mistake, it's fine. But if you fuck me just because, like, dude, we talked about this. What's going on? Yeah. I'll get like, I can't do this with this kid.
I got going for you. You were on Fallon, right?
Yes.
Have you ever done, like, a TV appearance like that and then the next morning had to show up to any kind of day job?
Yes.
I love those stories because it's like you see the top of the mountain, but it sounds like you're a pretty pragmatic person and you came about comedy in a way that was pretty pure. It didn't seem like you had delusions of grandeur in your head. So maybe this isn't for you, but I feel like for me, especially years ago, if I would have got like a big TV credit and had to show up at the day job, it would have been like,
I loved it. I thought it was so cool. Yeah, I found that so fun. I still was working at that finance job. And I booked Comedy Central and I took vacation days. I took a Friday and a Monday off so I could go out there and film it. And I loved it. I talked about, in that set, I talked about having currently that job. I didn't call myself a comedian because I wasn't. I had business cards that had a picture of me doing comedy. It said, Matthew Broussard, financial analyst. And I'd give them out after shows.
Do you have any more of those? I would love to put that on the pin board.
I have a picture somewhere. My mom has it. My mom. I saw the card this weekend because I forgot about it. My mom kept the card.
I love that.
And my goal was to keep that job as long as possible. I hated the notion of being financially dependent on comedy. I loved doing comedy as long as I got to do it in front of good crowds. Yeah. It didn't matter where I made my money. I would like to make the leap, and I would like for my job to not hold me back. But I my goal was to hold on to that job until they fired me, until I had to quit. Boy, was that a lot sooner than I planned. But yeah,
really
I show back up
fired.
And I love it. I came back to the office like, how cool is that? I'm going to be on TV and I have this job. Like, that's just so neat to me to live these two lives that felt so rebellious. Uh-huh. Because I was raised, I had a good education, upper middle class family. I had my life laid out for me from a very young age. My parents says, you have a small, here are your skills. Here are what we have trained you at. You have a small number of employment options. That I was breaking away from that at all and having some success was to me like I was James Dean.
You're the craziest motherfucker in the neighborhood.
So punk rock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What did your parents, I mean, now it's working out for you, but what did they say when you decided to do it?
My mom still hates it and would love if I quit. I can't call her if I'm like feeling bad about things. She was like, yeah, that sounds bad. You should quit.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow.
And then my dad passed away 2016, but he was like finally getting on board with it. He was like,
yeah.
I think he saw me on some TV show and he was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's my son up there doing the real thing. Yeah.
So what happened when you went back to the job after doing that set? Did you, did anyone say, oh, hey, what would you do this weekend? And
I was fired by the time. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't. People didn't really, in Houston,
no one knows about anything.
No one really understood. They're like, that sounds like a big deal. You're on Comedy Central. And I was like, yeah, no. They're like,
it's a lifelong dream.
Maybe I was projecting it insecure. Yeah, it was like, I remember the day I got the email saying I got it. I was like checking out at Whole Foods. Like, how are you doing? I'm like, it's the best day of my life.
I mean, it's a lifelong dream.
I just got booked for Comedy Central. This is the best. This is the best day of my life.
It's being drafted in the NFL, essentially.
Cool. They probably thought I was just like some crazy person. Uh-huh, you in a tie.
Uh-huh.
Because the normal, like the average person knows
pizza
what.
Pizza for $10 because Thursday on Thursdays, pizzas are $10.
That guy's on VH1 too.
Yeah. This guy over here working behind me, he had a whole arc on Law and Order. But when you get that, you're like, dude, this should be changing my life.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, I mean, obviously I feel like now there's so much information on people getting famous that you can figure out like, oh, these are kind of the trends and I have no control over it. No, guess what? It's like a viral thing or someone helped them. But back in like 2010, 2012, 2013, if you get this, you're fucking headlining. It's over, dude. You got a fucking TV credit. You're doing the big shit. And it's not that. That's why I always love when you show up to the job.
Yeah.
And I love that you were happy about it.
Changed nothing. And also, I thought it was going to change my life. I don't know anyone saw it. I think I got like 7 people messaged me online, and no one remembers me from it. You can't even find the video anymore. It didn't change. It did open doors, and...
Of
There's
course.
That huge mythology of this one thing made you famous of like,
it's usually a lot of little things. Yeah, so, yeah.
And there's that thing when people recognize me now, they're like, I think I've seen you in something. I'm like, you've actually probably seen me 3 times.
Sure.
The first time you forgot, second time I felt familiar, and third time it finally latched.
Ah.
And I think that's what it really takes of like, even Mulaney, who I love, I've quoted him in this, of like, I watched his stand up and then I realized later, oh, I had seen his Weekend Update segments.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think I saw 2 or 3 of his clips, and I finally looked down at his name. You have to, the real way to stick is by just showing, putting your fucking face in front of them.
Is working
until
consistently.
They can't forget you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
a lot
working
of little things.
Consistently.
It adds up. Like, there's very few people who we see one clip and go, I'm a fan. We see one, and then we see another, and we see another. They're like, okay, they win.
What do you think the average person, how many comics do you think they know that are actual stand ups? Not SNL, nothing else, just stand ups.
God.
2 to 3, maybe.
Wait,
your average person. If you walked up to someone, I mean, this is New York City, so this might be a rigged deck.
How many?
But if you were in some random town, and you're like Phoenix, Arizona, and you walked up to somebody and you said, "Hey, how many comics do you know that are actual?" And how many do you think they would know? 1 or 2, 3?
My mom has seen all of Nate Bargatze's specials.
Oh wow!
And still doesn't know his name.
That's funny.
Yeah. What do you think?
5 to 10.
And who do you think's like the one that shows up on every list? It's probably someone famous, like Eddie Murphy or something. Or not even that. I think he ages out for people in their 20s.
My mom knows who, or my dad knows who Shane Gillis is now.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you're a comedian, still, though.
He doesn't.
But there's still some association. There has to be. And he's a Philly guy.
My mom watches a lot of stand-up, and then she'll call me. Yeah, and she'll call me and she'll tell me who she saw. The last 2 people she watched, and this is so bonkers to me, were Marcella Arguello and Alice Wetterland.
Wow.
And she hasn't watched Shane Gillis yet. And I mean, no disrespect to those comics, but
sure.
It's so interesting that she finds these, I would say, less accessible hours of comedy. She just kind of opens up whatever pops up in her face, and it's kind of random what's recommended to
I'll
her.
I'll send her my stuff.
Yeah.
Less accessible.
I'm like, those
to
are
me.
Both HBO specials. Yeah. Well, she'll kind of just open and all like Pretty Willie, and there's another one where I won't say the name, but I'm like, oh, you watched that one? That's not good. That person's not really even a stand up.
You keep telling me to quit special. And you're watching this shit, Mom?
Yeah. My therapist will always tell me what stand ups he's watched recently. He was like, oh, I saw this clip, this person. What do you think of them? I like this one or I didn't like this one. And he'll find some, you know, pretty notable people. He'll be like talking about like, what's his name? Marcello from SNL.
Uh-huh.
And you know, some of the bigger names, and, you know, Jesse Kirsten. And then for a couple of weeks, we had this mystery game going where he was like, this one guy keeps showing up. I really like him. Clean cut guy, wears a suit. And I'm like, Kellen Erskine? He goes, maybe. I go, kind of losing his hair? He goes, no, dark hair. And after like 3 or 4 weeks, he was like, oh, I think I forgot a name. It's John Maroney. I'm like, you didn't know who John Mulaney was this whole time?
I mean,
like
he's
2 months
like pop
ago.
Culture now. I mean, with wow. He's pop culture.
He's a punchline. Yeah. I can say Mulaney in my act and people
would know
I can
who he is.
On 80% of people catching the reference.
That's wild.
It's crazy.
That he would know
the
that.
Order in which people learn who people are is pretty odd.
Yeah. My therapist is a only, I mean, not only, but he's like really famous in comedians. So I'll never ask him about who he's watch
because
he probably sees them and I'm like, I don't want to know all your more successful clients than me. I'm already fucked up coming in here. I don't want to deal with all this extra insecurity. I'm already bringing a whole bunch in with me. What all right, working the road now, especially now that you're engaged,
mm-hmm.
I you've been engaged, but I know you have like a whatever, you have a partner, a serious partner,
yeah,
and I have a 2-year-old now. And I'm noticing differences in just in the reality of like how I approach the road and why I'm there and like what's important. Has that changed for you at all now that you're looking to be a family man and married and all those things and life being more traditional in a small sense?
Yeah, I would really like a more traditional life. The you leave a day job where you move from day job to comedy and then you spend the next however many years of your life praying for once again that kind of regularity.
Yeah.
I would dream of a thing I could just wake up and go to and make money that day and then leave at the end of the day, whether it was writing or acting. I would kill for that. I have so much free time and so much of a lack of a schedule, and I miss it so much, and it's so weird. I left that
Yeah.
That was not a bad gig. I was like, why did I hate that? Why did I want to get out of that so much? I guess I kind of said I didn't, but that feeling of like, oh, I would love some stability and just doing comedy on my terms because now it's,
well, not,
I'm scared. So I don't know how to do it long term. I don't know how we'll do it because Laura does comedy too. And we don't know. We know someone will have to give up something and it's going to be ugly.
Yeah.
And our goal is to just work really hard and make a lot of money so we can have freedom when that time comes and we have to make those tough calls of who quits what.
Do you guys tour together?
A little bit.
Yeah. That makes
sense. She has enough comedy of her own that she does.
Yeah. That's got to make it easier, though.
She'd rather be here doing comedy in town, you know, to actually.
I love that answer because that's kind of where I was going with, you know, the question is that for me now, like I was home all weekend. I couldn't take any gigs because I just had my son. And it hit me that I was like, man, I'm glad I was able to do that. And I remember being so ashamed of having to make money in other ways. And then even when I started making, you know, I was so ashamed of it. I didn't want to tell anyone because it made me feel like I wasn't, even though I was doing professional work and I was making a living at stand up, like I could have quit. Like now I could quit all the other ways I make money and I'd probably pull down 35,000-40,000 at stand up, which technically is making it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that,
no,
there's no way I could have a wife
in New York.
There's no way I could have a son. I mean, even in any other town, 40 grand isn't that much.
No.
I mean, maybe, you know, some like Michigan and some places, but still you're not living.
No.
Like you're not going, you're not taking your family on a vacay or able to do fun stuff. Like it's just, it's really weird now how I look at stand up and touring differently and all that and why I look at it differently. And it's funny that you're saying stability now. It's like, because now you have to take any gig.
Yeah.
Well, not any gig, but you know.
Money is the primary motivator. And I read a study. All you really need to be happy is like $600,000 a year. That's it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your punchline. That's fucking funny.
That's it.
I got all serious.
Beyond that?
How much were they saying? Because I bet I make more than that. And I'm pretty miserable.
Beyond that, what are you even doing? You're spinning your wheels.
Seriously, it is $600,000.
It might be.
It really is 600,000. There's I've been looking this up. That is more accurate than the 75,000 they say.
Oh, fuck that number. That's poverty in New York. I'm sorry. I spent my whole life chasing six figures because that was what my dad made. He was like, I'll say it. This is weird transparency. My dad made about 100. Me growing up in the 90s, he did a lot of money.
Yeah.
It was a good amount of money then.
I
wanted nothing. In Corpus Christi, it was a lot of money.
That's banging.
When we moved to Atlanta, we needed more, but we had then at that point he was well invested, so we had other income and pension. He was retired, and my mom made money, and it was good. But 100 to 150 by the time he retired, which was we had a boat, we had a nice little boat,
we had
a house,
we
had cars.
You can go pay
brother went to private school, and then he had a scholarship. But then when I went to, we went to public, private. There's nothing I wanted. There was never anything we couldn't afford.
That's all I want. Wow. I just want a little piece, and I want to make sure that we don't, anything we need we can have, and anything you want we can get within reason that isn't stupid. I mean, who needs a Lamborghini? I mean, I'm not saying I want to buy you that, but like having a little boat, it's fucking amazing. Like
you said, we had Camrys, Toyota Camrys, and I think my brother got a Ford Explorer, which is a real nice car.
Nice middle of the road.
Yeah. Great.
Awesome, sick looking vehicle.
The stuff we spent a lot of money on was like college and my private
experience
school.
Experience
And that was investing. And I just wanted to make six figures. That was my goal of like whatever I do, I just want to be able to say I make $100,000 like my dad did. That is a pretty small amount of money now.
Dude,
I cannot raise a family.
Now it's $200,000.
60,000.
That's what it is.
When I was in high school, I was going into engineering school. I was like, I make 60K.
Yeah. Oh, I remember thinking, you know, when in 2000.
I remember somebody going, that's not a lot of money.
No, but in 06, when I moved out here,
I
got a job for $45,000. You would think I was CEO of Walmart. Like I was spending, I had a credit card with like a $5,000 limit. I thought I was like the guy.
That
was 06.
Okay. That was what I was making in 11.
Oh, in 11? Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was how I was living. I was paying maybe $900 rent
a month.
So was
I, $900.
And I spent so little money. I just did comedy. I would eat super cheap. I would not go out to deals. I was not dating. I did not go out drinking. I just did comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saving a lot of money at that point.
Yeah.
But once it's impossible after that. Once you save a little bit, it just kind of frees you
up
a little bit.
I've never been able
to.
That's
what I had when I got fired was a good cushion. See, I had a good
but
and
see,
I ended up not cutting into it. I lost my job and then within like 2 months I was making
working
money
enough
in college gigs.
Oh, sick.
I booked a 2 months after I did NACA and I booked like 50 gigs for the year.
Because you were clean. You were clean, too.
But I was young. Oh, I could relate to them. I was 25 years old. My jokes resonated. And that was how I made my living. And I started working with MTV. And I had always had the money paid. I was really fortunate.
You did it smart. But that's your fucking parents being great parents, at least like instilling you.
White privilege. It's a lot of things. It's a lot of luck.
But when you said the thing about your mom, it like shot me into dad mode. And I was thinking, what if my son told me he wants to do stand-up, I might have the same reaction as your mom. Because I've had to work my ass off to just maintain a little piece of stand-up that I have right now just to keep the bills paid.
Your son's like, I want to do stand-up. Just be the funny guy at the office.
Just be the funniest CEO in the history.
Be the funny guy at the office. Maybe you do like a little bracket pool. You get into the NCAA.
Seriously. Don't fucking be a stand-up comic.
I tell you what, I'll give you some jokes you take to the office.
What about like an OnlyFans? You want to start great, you and your 1099 mom, income.
Me and your mom gave you great genetics. How about you start an OnlyFans, all right? Bang a few broads, guys. Whatever you got to do to make your money, get your creative outlet.
Let them see all the way down there.
Way better than stand-up. I'd rather be showing my asshole right now on OnlyFans than have to show up to Altoona to do an hour for five fuckers at a VFW.
I'll
to
share
make
with my friend.
Bucks.
My son's got an OnlyFans.
And at my shows, I'll hand him a card with your asshole. My buddy Matthew Sarr gave me an idea. Put a picture of your asshole on it, and it just says comedian. I want that card so bad. It needs to go on the pin wall here in the break room.
So good.
So another you were talking about is a point I love is the pride of I have to make all of my money doing comedy is such a rookie game.
It's so amateur night.
And I see young comics like saying on stage that they're a full-time comedian. I'm like, how is that possible?
Homeless.
Because I know how I'm getting by with my numbers, and I don't see you doing the road unless you're doing college gigs. I don't know what you're doing. You're lying to me or to yourself, and I would respect you more. A formative moment for me was I was at the Comedy Store. I was new to LA. I felt like a pariah. I didn't know anyone. I showed up there.
Not a friendly environment when no one knows
you. Me at 25, I was not the kind of guy you would assume would be funny. I just looked like a wannabe actor just hanging out. And I mentioned on stage that I was a financial analyst in an otherwise lackluster set. And Eddie Pepitone comes up to me and talks to me for 20 minutes about finance.
Oh, wow.
If I had said I was a professional comedian, that guy would have forgot me the second I got
off stage.
He saw
you being honest, and that attracted him to you.
And he was so interested in finance and how it worked. He didn't know one thing about it. He was like, how does that work? I'm like, I'd love to explain it. It's my job, so let's party. Awesome. And I see a lot of people where if you talk about your day job, I'm more interested in you and helping you as a comic than you trying to lie about being a place you aren't yet.
That's fascinating. Yeah. That's really interesting. I can totally agree with you. There's a realness to it.
Even big name comics have like tequila companies they're starting to to make money other ways.
Dude, passive and supplemental income is so necessary in stand-up. And I think in this day and age with the way things cost and everyone now having to have two hustles. I mean, there's a lot of people don't like except Eddie McGowan. Do you got OnlyFans I don't know about?
Bro,
I mean,
I'm going straight for the vodka. The fucking McG vodka.
that's what I'm doing.
I'm going to fulfill my birthright of being a real estate person.
I mean, really,
we invested in some property this year.
There's no schedule.
I like this a lot. I'm turning into that guy. I'm like, well, the Homestead Act, you can actually, if you claim residency, you pay lower tax, they cap the tax. I hear myself talking. I'm like, you're being that.
Is now the time to do that, though, with the way housing prices are and they're higher than ever? Or
if you can buy mostly cash, holy shit. What a wonderful position to be in.
But it's mostly, that's what I mean. So we're looking to buy a house in 2 years. And we have some people near here, like, they're trying to buy a house now. And they had a fucking beautiful house they liked. Put money, they're like, hey, let's do this. Get the deal signed, let's go. And someone just came in with all cash.
Oh, wow.
And just bounces you.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what, honestly, there's so many attractive, there's so few buyers.
How does that work? Because I thought the person who sells their house, they get paid, right?
By the bank.
You get paid by the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But the escrow shorter, and when the cash is readily available, it's preferable.
And nothing could go. I mean, there's just, I don't know why a seller would prefer cash, except that the money's there, and there's no worry about the no paperwork, no paying for attorneys, no paying for all the people that
it cuts
negotiate.
Out ton of shit. Yeah.
Time
and
it's a done deal. I would if you were selling, would you say, hey, we want to take this pile of money now or pay it off?
Yeah.
Well, you don't even get the. You get paid off flat. I assume you get paid off right away by the bank. The bank makes the money.
But
answers
you
over
said
years.
It right. There's all this shit. A ton of shit can happen when it's a loan. A ton of shit. The finance could get pulled.
They could lose.
It's just a lot more. There's a lot less risk if you see the money in the account already and they can just pay you.
Yeah, right. It just happened. Okay.
It's just
okay,
they're more attractive, and this they also outbid.
Oh, they paid.
And they outbid.
Oh, they outbid. Yeah. Okay.
But even I think if it was even Steven, they would still take the cash.
I guess you have that much cash. It's like, okay, what's going
to
take another 5
grand? Now you're getting
to
a place where what, like 0.001% has that kind of cash, and anytime they want to scoop something on you, they can. And this person's not even going to fucking live in the house. It's a big enough plot where they're going to separate it, and they're going to make two houses so they can make double the money. And
generate income immediately. Yeah.
So they're weeding out the middle class by doing that. Whatever.
We were doing that. We're looking to do something like that. We're like, well, what a great way to like make money if you can just if you're willing to put away some now, you immediately create income, and then I was like, what a good way. Why don't more people do this? It's like, oh, this is what BlackRock does.
Yeah.
BlackRock took this and scaled it up to billions or trillions.
Yeah. See, evil. You doing that, like you and your wife doing that as an investment because you guys have jobs that don't have a foreseeable future you can really plan on like other jobs.
She has a good job, but yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah, she does. But you know what I mean, though. It's like. I'm like, oh, cool. So if a person, saved up enough money with their partner and they bought, okay, I don't see a problem with that. But what you're saying, when a fucking huge company's doing it and just weeding out people like me who like make a great living, I just don't have I'm not liquid enough at 800,000 to just
We're all renting forever.
Yeah,
that's how it's working.
Yeah, that's the way it's trying to be. So that's lucky. Fucking brutal.
This is turning into a financial advice podcast. This is so funny. I was mad money with.
I was dating a girl in Philly, and her family was very, very wealthy. And she bought a house, and we were living together, and it had an extra apartment, and it was generating
Philly's
revenue.
Not cheap. Yeah.
And I was like, cool. So I'll be like the landlord.
Yeah. I'll be like Schneider.
I was like, so I'll be like the landlord. She's like, no, you do not talk to them. I'm like, yeah, but if they need something
and
fixed,
then are your teeth.
Well, if they're
all
behind on a payment and they need a little.
And what's tell me, your teeth were all fucked up.
I had broken teeth too. I was like, yeah, but if they needed something, you know what I mean? I could be.
You're not
she's
the
like,
face of the organization.
Like,
you're more behind the scenes
involved
guy.
Involved in this in any way. You're not to talk to them.
What if I just do this with a pipe? Menacingly
outside their window.
The first, it's the third.
What do you have going on right now? Like, what stuff that people can look out for?
Filmed a special. I'm on the road a bunch. Check out my cities: Austin, DC, Toronto, blah blah blah.
What are you excited about? Anything, or it's all pretty much standard?
Just the special. Just getting that special out. It's like a lot of jokes I really like.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm working on.
Where'd you shoot it at?
Littlefield, Brooklyn.
Oh,
yeah, that light board there is really pretty.
Cool, man. How long until it comes out? Do you think
May if I get my fucking editing done?
Is the
I
cut
do my part of it?
Are you you're not doing the editing, right?
I have to like say
you have to go through it. All, that's what I mean. Yeah.
We had I think 7 cameras.
We got
and they're real nice, real pretty. Yeah.
Wow.
Hell yeah. Is the move? I know Netflix. A lot of people would prefer a Netflix deal, obviously. But I feel like with YouTube, or has that now been exasperated? With YouTube, a lot of people, if you have a big enough following, could generate enough cash from that if you get 1 million views on it.
I think for me, my thought isn't I don't need to monetize this in a desperate way. I would just like as many people to see it as possible.
Okay. So that's the two different thought processes.
I'm always late to these things. The people who are truly successful in comedy are the ones who do things that no one else is seeing. I haven't been that guy in the past. I've never been the first one to an app or a platform. But how it looks like right now, the people with the really popular Netflix specials are the ones who had one already pop on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Schultz, Shane.
So you've had
who else? Jared Fried. Like they put out their own, and then Netflix is like, because the model for Netflix has changed now. They're not looking to give you a following. They're looking to
take
you to
your
bring
following.
One.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's all. That's so funny.
Right.
That's
Rife
everywhere.
Did a special. Then he did Netflix. Another example.
Right. Yeah. Damn, that's fucking crazy. Now you like, no one develops anyone anymore.
But I have to say this though. I do like this. Is you remember back in like 2018 when all the specials had like a gimmick?
Yeah.
Remember, was it Drew Michael did like a no audience?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know
I remember
what I mean?
That. Yeah.
Gary Goldman did like a sketch in between with his mom. Like everything was just like, now it's like shoot it for YouTube, shoot it in a club.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward
and
now,
it's
right?
Like, I love.
Now I miss that.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like
I miss nuance.
Danny Jollis and I complain about this all the time. We're like, we should go back in time and just smack our past selves for complaining about Nanette. Because compared to the crowd work clips we have now,
yeah.
And like, oh, God forbid someone have a through line and some heart pushing the narrative along beyond just jokes. And now it's just 40-second joke, you're gay, applause, over.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we've let attention span shrink so much. And
Nuance and artistry aren't even something that people have in their Rolodex.
Going for something a little more. There's a balance, obviously, but it's another thing like the thing earlier that kind of waffles. Right?
You want
short, really concise immediate payoff, or something that is a bit more you soak in, like Dune 2. Dune 2 was such a good movie because you had to actually pay attention. It wasn't just wham bam pow.
Yeah,
I think we're so tired of the freneticism, if that's the word, of like Marvel stuff, where like Dune made you take in this shot.
Yeah,
just it's a painting on the screen. They're gonna let it sit there for more than 3 seconds.
Yep. Yeah, you got to be immersed in this to get the art right.
Yeah, so I wonder which way comedy is about to go.
Hopefully it stays
back out alive. Again,
you know,
I think it will.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone that is human would say that they wouldn't want to watch another human be able to
in person for sure
articulate something that they're going through in a way that they can't. I mean, I think that will always be something.
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
What are you gonna do, Ed?
I'm just
when the revolution comes.
Just trying to put this hour together.
Just trying to get to the next spot, motherfucker.
Just trying to get this fucking... Just
that's a full-time job. Like, doing an hour of comedy used to be a thing that you're like, what are you doing? You're like, working on my hour. And people are like, wow, okay, good.
Because you would spend 3 years on it.
Me, like, you just did a special. What else is going on? Yeah. Ah, what? You making noises? You're building an app? What are you doing? You got a sketch show? You're gonna
hit up that guy again for the financial analyst gig?
I poured my life into these 60 minutes of
jokes. I know, right?
And you're like,
but he's like,
not enough
years. Dance. Tell everybody where they can find you.
I'm at Monday Punday on all platforms.
Awesome. You can follow me at Josh Accardo. Go to joshaccardo.com for tour dates. The Working Class Holes Tour, headlined by me, featuring the one and only Eddie McGee, starts in May. So make sure you start buying your tickets. Those links will be out in the beginning of April.
Follow me on Ed McGowan at Ed McGowan Comedy. Follow me, go to my website, edmcgowan.com. Email us at workingclasscomedians@gmail.com. Tell us all about your favorite comedians. Who's your mom's favorite comedian? Does she remember?
That's a great segment.
Gary Goldman.
Goldman, right. The names are always wrong. All right, we'll see you guys again next week. See
you. You can listen to us on all major podcast platforms every Wednesday. You can follow us on Instagram at Working Class Holes. Also, make sure you watch the full show on YouTube. All you got to do is type in Working Class Holes. And please don't forget to rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. Come on.